Welcome to the official Espigan podcast, hosted by Dr. Alex Noisley.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever and whenever you are. Today, I'm speaking with Professor Isabelle Scherz of Louvain in Belgium on pancreatitis in children. She would like to tell us about her experience with what is, I think, aside from cystic fibrosis, a relatively uncommon disorder. That is, of course, pancreatitis in children. Autoimmune pancreatitis in children, characteristic features, diagnosis, and management is one of the articles that she'd like to share with us. Another is inherited pancreatic exocrine insufficiency in pancreatitis when children transition to adult care. And then finally, a case report with others from her home institution. And I am going to botch the pronunciation of this drug. Is it cinacalcet? Sustainedly prevents pancreatitis in a child with a compound heterozygous SPINK1 score AP2S1 mutation. Isabelle, thank you for making yourself available today. I've got the first question for you, and that is a case report. Tell me why you wanted to share with us a case report.
Thank you. Yes, in fact, this was the start of my career as a young GI, and it's where my interest for pancreatology started. So that was the reason why I chose this case report. The child was had pancreatitis episodes, and she also had hypercalcemia. Genetic hypercalcemia, both very rare conditions. So she came to one of my clinics with a 4-centimeter thick medical record, as you know.
Oh, boy.
Every possible exam was done, but that's what is frequently seen in our tertiary referral clinics. Nobody sat down to bring all the puzzle piece together. So I love solve problems and I love puzzles. So that's how I started to try to decipher what was going on in this child. And that's how we came up with a very rare but a treatable cause of pancreatitis. And that's made me happy as a doctor, as this was a very rare case of pancreatitis we could treat. And we know that pancreatitis is a difficult condition with very few therapeutic opportunities. And so that's how it started. And that's how I would like to tell young physicians that a very interesting case that Passio wrote. You just have to try to understand what's going on, and it can start a career and some interest.
You know, I didn't look at the date of that paper. When did you publish it?
Oh, we published it several years after I met that patient, in fact, okay. And the reason for this was that we had to prove that the treatment we offered her truly helped her to treat her pancreatitis. And in fact, one day after she was treated, she came back with another 2 episodes of pancreatitis, and She told us afterwards that she discontinued her treatment. And so that's how we could prove that this treatment was really effective in the treatment of her pancreatitis.
So that was a patient, very the patient herself conducted the experiment.
That's
well,
true.
Well, we don't often find patients that are such eager collaborators, I must say. But congratulations to you for doing it. So that was what got you on the pancreatitis road.
Absolutely, absolutely. And from there, you know, the rest of the road was written, because as I started to talk about this patient, other came up with other stories like this one, and that's how very quickly from all over my center and then from all over the country, people asked me questions about pancreatitis. And so I continued to try to understand what's going on. And from there on, other people from surrounding countries like France, Luxembourg, the Netherlands came to me, you know, something about pancreatitis, maybe you can help with our stories. And that's how it grew just beyond what I ever had thought.
I like that. I know, I can imagine what it's like to acquire a reputation for, oh my God, I have no idea what to do with this. Let's just send it to Isabel and at least then it will be out of our clinic. Well, you were a dumping ground, but you took, if I may say, there's an English proverb: when life gives you lemons, make yourself some lemonade.
Yeah, that's true.
And so you were given pancreatitis. Oh no, not another one of those impossible cases! And you just buckled down and said, at least nobody knows more than I do. So if I can't sort it out, then, well, I'm going to try to sort this out or die trying. Now, when did you decide as this was going on that it was necessary for you to acquire the polish that you've told me before that a stay in Toronto gave you?
Well, that's true. So I built quite of some expertise with pancreatology, and then I thought it was very important to get some experience from abroad. And again, I was presenting actually this case in one of the SGAN meetings, and my poster was just next to the one of Tanya Gonska, which is the expert in pancreatitis and CF in Toronto. And so we got to talk to each other, and I asked her, I remember I was very stressed about it, but I asked her if I could come to Toronto, and if and she immediately said, well, I would be very happy to meet you there. And so I wrote her the next day, and because she was there with basic scientists on pancreas and pancreatology from also from Toronto, Joanna Romans, and I wrote them both. And like 2 weeks later, I was like, invited there to go as a subspecialty fellow in pancreatitis and CF the next year.
You spent an entire year there?
No, I spent the first 9 months, and then 1 year later, another 6 months.
Fantastic. Now, you comment, and I think this is an important part of your learning there, that you had the chance to collaborate with basic scientists who were studying mechanisms of disease in the pancreas. You must have missed them when you came back to Belgium.
Oh, that's true. But with the new technologies, I mean, overseas, it's never far. You know, you can see with Zoom, with Teams, we could meet and we could just communicate with each other. And in fact, by collaborating, they had collaborators in Europe too, and so I'm now collaborating with these European ones and other labs who are doing very basic and translational research in the field. So you know, it's a small world, but everybody knows each other, and it's very nice to meet all the people and just to be involved in their projects.
Have you been able to build up a core of pancreatic physiologists to assist you with your research there in Louvain?
Yes, I was very fortunate to find a person, a basic scientist, in fact, at the university campus. It was Patrick Jacquemin, and indeed he studied a lot of pancreatic pathologies as well as pancreatic cancer, but this is not really a problem in children. Mm-hmm, but that's how I connected with him, and he was very eager to share his knowledge on basic pancreatology, and he was also very eager to have like a new objective in his research, because he wants to have like patient stories to connect what he's seeing and what he's trying to understand in the lab, and just to connect it with people and their diseases.
Do you know, I'm starting to get a better picture, one that was easier to understand than is your CV, of how your career unfolded. And here you are, you're collecting all of these cases willy-nilly, and you decide, do you know, no one has really taken a look at pediatric pancreatitis and said, is this the same disorder, or in some ways does it differ from the disorder that we know as adult pancreatitis? And that is the subject of the first article that I mentioned. That article said, in effect, that there are two kinds of pancreatitis, one of which is lymphoplasmacytic and the other of which is duct-centric and fibrotic. And you said most pediatric pancreatitis is the latter, which corresponds rather well to a type of adult pancreatitis. So knowing that, you hoped in that article that to have these criteria set out and would effectively scare more cases out of the bushes, would make diagnosis easier, and would provide hints on how to assess and how to treat. As I say, that was 5 years ago. Has that article had the effect for which you hoped?
Yeah, surely. First, I was very happy to have that article, because it was really a world effort. We put together all what we had for information about a patient with autoimmune pancreatitis from Australia going to North America and also and moving over to Europe and Asia. So I think it's, you know, you start somewhere, as you told, but and you never know where you will end. And in fact, it ended by joining a lot of people you never thought it would be possible. So that was the first thing. And the second thing is that indeed we published together with the INSPIRE Consortium, which is the North American pancreatic association for which studies pancreatitis in children, and together we could write three papers summarized the features of this disease in children, and it was very interesting to see and to delineate what was going on in children, and also to show to adult pancreatologists that the disease was probably much different from what we see in adults, and that we could not mix both, and we had to take those things separately.
Here we stop. What are the differences? What are we seeing in pediatric disease that they lack in adult, or what are we not seeing that is present in adult? Give me your laundry list.
Yes, so so in children, autoimmune pancreatitis is usually an inflammatory condition, whereas in adults, it's mostly an immune problem. So you have older people with either some type of cancers or even just immune diseases who produces IgG4, which is an immunoglobulin that fixes, amongst others, pancreatitis epitopes and causes pancreatitis in this way. So it's a problem that we see in older persons, and that's completely different from what we see in children, where of course it happens more or less at all ages, but also but probably with a peak in adolescence. The second thing we see is that the disease presents in two forms, like pancreatitis and obstructive jaundice, whereas in adults it's more a problem of pancreatitis and less obstructive jaundice. And also on the histopathologic point of view, we have a mix of features of autoimmune pancreatitis type 1 and autoimmune pancreatitis type 2 that is described in adults. So that are mean differences. But from there on, the what we also can see is that a more aggressive disease than autoimmune pancreatitis type 2 that we see in adults, because the risk to evolve to diabetes, but also to exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, is much higher than the numbers we see in adults. So
is that a reason to advocate more aggressive treatment, immunosuppressive treatment in children than in adults?
That might be, but and that's where we get stuck for the moment, because it's a rare disease. So it's very difficult to compare treatment modalities. And until now, we could not prove that treating autoimmune pancreatitis like with steroids could benefit the patients more than not treating them. And for this, we really need prospective studies, large cohort prospective studies, but it's very difficult to manage that because we just have a few patients with this kind of problem. So we will have to go multicentric, but even multicontinental.
Okay. Well, and of course, the problem with your patients is that they disappear. They turn into adults, and then you have to coordinate follow-up and coordinate longer-term studies with a rather different set of physicians, a rather less sympathetic set of physicians, if I may say so, but that's neither here nor there. Your position paper on effectively saying, hey, adult pancreatologists, this is what you're going to be dealing with, and it's not what you think, was interesting for me. What, leaving aside cystic fibrosis, then what did you want to tell our adult pancreatology colleagues?
Well, we wanted to make them aware that they had to follow these patients much more than they have to follow their adult patients with autoimmune pancreatitis type 2, because they are more at risk for recurrence, but they are much more at risk to develop exocrine and endocrine pancreatic insufficiency over time. And saying that, we don't know what's their risk about developing cancer on the long term.
Yes,
and it's important, because when you have aggressive inflammatory infiltrates, the more you are inflammatory, the more your risk to develop pancreatic cancer is higher. So I really believe that long-term studies on this are important. And of course, and I agree with you that adults will have to follow that. But I have to say that depending on the country where you are living in, it's more or less easy, because the adults are just on the other side of us. So it's quite easy in Belgium to organize that, but it's much more difficult when you are working in different settings.
Different settings, different centers, and different hospitals. Isabel, I've loved this chat, but our producer is making threatening gestures at me. And I want to close this at the moment, but only after asking you, is there something that you'd like to bring up on which we haven't touched?
Well, I just hope to make people and the SBN members more aware about pancreatic diseases, and I hope to, with this podcast, to bring them like some interest for the disease, but also to tell them that they can join us and just have fun with us while discussing about all these very interesting patients.
That is really important. Again, not everybody has a house pancreatologist like you on whose expertise and opinions to draw. So it's really, really necessary to be able to reach out either individually or as a group to say, Isabel, help! And
there are many people that are doing that for the moment. So, and I'm always very happy to answer their questions and try to bring them that positive vibe just to join the group and just talk to us when they have difficult patients.
Speaking of positive vibe, there's so many good things about Belgium, and I have to say most of them have to do with food.
Yeah.
But who would, mayonnaise and fried potatoes, my golly. But more important than that is that we close these podcast interviews with a request for the interviewee to share with us a song, usually a song, could be a piece of instrumental music, that presents for those who don't have the good luck to be born Belgian some little flavor of what it's like there. So take us beyond Moulefrit and share your song with us.
So I would like to share the song of Papa Oute from Stromae, which is a Belgian singer. And he has more than 200 million views on YouTube. So I think you will know him.
Dites-moi d'où il vient, enfin je saurai où je vais. Maman dit que lorsqu'on cherche bien, on finit toujours par trouver. Elle dit qu'il n'est jamais très loin, qu'il part très souvent travailler. Maman dit travailler c'est bien, bien mieux qu'être mal accompagné. Pas vrai, où est ton papa? Dis-moi où est ton papa? Sans même devoir lui parler, il sait ce qui ne va pas. Ah sacré papa, dis-moi où es-tu caché? Ça doit faire au moins mille fois que j'ai compté mes doigts. Hey. Où t'es, papa, où t'es? Où t'es, papa, où t'es? Où t'es, papa, où t'es? Où t'es, où t'es, où papa, où t'es? Où t'es, 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 où t'es, où papa, où t'es? Quoi, qu'on y croit ou pas, il y aura bien un jour où on n'y croira plus. Un jour ou l'autre, on sera tous papa et d'un jour à l'autre, on aura disparu.
If you would like to listen to the song in full length, please check out our SBGAN playlist.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being one of our interviewees here at the SBGAN podcast series, and good luck to you and to the children whom you take care of.
Thank you very much.